Hey, this is Jeff. We'll get to the show in a second. If you want to support the show or find back episodes of the show or find our other podcasts or find articles or quotes on early learning, all that kind of stuff is over at playvolutionhq.com. We're trying to curate the early learning world. Check it out. Here's the show. Podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. In studio with me is Lisa Murphy.
Hello and good morning.
And Tasha Johnson.
Aloha.
And Lisa Murphy, we've got a special guest on the phone. Can
we
you introduce her and bring her in? I'm very excited about this.
I am excited too, and I was excited when she accepted our invitation. We have on the phone with us today Mimi Shenfield, who is the author of at least three books, I think, right, Mim? Three? At least?
No, more.
More than that? That's at least. The very first book I read was Teaching in the Key of Life, and I do think that we were doing some recollecting, if that's the right word, this morning, and I was trying to think of the very first time I saw you speak, and I believe it was in either 1993 or 1994. You were out in San Diego at the Marina Village Conference Center, and I just kind of went down a memory lane, and I'm really glad that you're here and have the opportunity for you to tell us some stories and talk about some of your thoughts about the industry today and maybe some of the changes you've seen through the years.
Great. Great, Lisa, but you know, it's funny.
Tell me.
When you heard me speak, whenever anybody ever asks me to be a speaker, I always say, and I still say, I'm not a speaker. I'm a talker.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, when you say speaker, I sort of shut up. You know?
Oh,
like speaker,
okay.
Speaker means like you're. It's just a different feeling, you know? So I always say, can we talk?
Definitely.
Of course, then you hear the Bronx, so yeah. Then that's not so much. I should stick with speaker because you don't hear the Bronx, but whatever. I'm sacrificing the pronunciation.
Maybe I got to tell you, that mindset changed my life, and I owe you everything that's good in my life as a speaker, presenter, talker today goes back to you. The first time I saw you talk was I think it was Des Moines, Iowa, at the Iowa AEYSA conference way years ago, and I was a baby presenter then, and I thought, because all the dudes I'd ever seen present were wearing jackets and ties, and I thought that's the way you had to do it. And then you take the stage, and there's a puppet involved, and you're barefoot. And I thought, oh, my God, I don't have to be who I'm not and do this job. And so from then on, I mean, I think I went home and burnt my ties. and I've enjoyed it a lot more, and it actually, I became more authentic after seeing you, and I appreciate that, and thank you for that.
Oh, I'm so happy. Oh, then you sacrifice people going, what a weird person. So you hear at least somebody going, you helped me free myself. Oh, yes.
I appreciate that. And I'll
the
never
kids
forget
need,
it.
The kids need you the way you are so much. They need you to be open and free. And you know, when I meet people going into early childhood, and, you know, I'm always doing stuff, you know, with organizations and groups and you know, community colleges, as well as the little ones. But when you're with them and you see people who are very inhibited and who, like, can we sing? Well, I don't really sing, you know. Okay, well, listen, we've got to move to this music. No, well, I'm not trained.
Oh,
you know?
Geez.
I mean, when was the last time a four-year-old kid said, can I see your credentials? You know, may I see your transcript from college? What is your actual name? What is in your job description? I mean, little kids just see you.
True.
And they don't even see, you know, the things that other people notice, like maybe your gray hair, or, you know, they may see it, but they don't care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't care that you might have a pimple or a wrinkle. I mean, if they see you, they love you. And if they love you, they love you more than anything in the world. So I think it's great that you were, that you felt inspired to just take your tie off and roll up your sleeves and join in with the children. I don't think we do it enough.
And do we not let them see our authentic selves enough too? I get this feeling that we're living in a world where there's such a focus on curriculum and achievement and objectives that a lot of times caregivers, teachers don't feel like they can let the kids
see their humanness.
See that human side. And we have to, we keep this wall up between us and the children sometimes.
Jeff, I'm so glad you said that, because this has been decades. I mean, you know, there's a t-shirt that says, "I can't believe I'm still protesting the same stuff." I didn't say the bad SH word, but I didn't say it.
You're allowed if you want to say it.
If you're good at language arts and you're a gifted child, you figure that. But anyway, the point is, we have gotten to a time in our education journey with children that is not a good journey. And that's why, Uwe, we need you so badly, Uwe.
Thank you.
Because you're helping, and Jeff, all the inspirational, you know, urging. But the children, you know, we do not learn, young children do not learn in the way that this country has been dictating to them to learn. And you and I know it. You know, when I see these curriculum for, like, you know, children in wombs, you know, I'm a womb mother. Oh, I'm a womb mother. When I see those phonics cards, you know, swallowed in pills, and then they open up, and the baby in the womb can read them. You know what I mean? I don't know why we're waiting. Why don't we start with the man and the woman before they meet? You know, why are we waiting until they're born? Oh my God!
Yeah,
they're wasting time. They're not gonna make a, you know,
a smart
so you
baby.
Have those kids. You have those kids getting pushed, and curriculum. And you know, there are children, and Lisa, you know this. Both of you know it. And there are children whose fingers aren't ready to be writing yet. Their little fingers, I mean, they're just not that they're slow. It's just that they have their own journey mm-hmm. of development. And we're just saying, at this age, these children should be writing all their consonants.
Yeah, right? But their hands don't work.
Yeah, but then if a mom sees her little three-year-old dropping the pencil and just writing backwards or holding it sideways, she quickly calls a shrink.
Yes.
You know, and we start giving her Ritalin or something. You know what I'm saying?
Totally.
We're a little nuts. We're absolutely nut.
And so, and has it been like this for the whole of your career, or is it ebbed and flowed? Was there a better time and we've gotten worse, or has it continued to get worse, or what have you seen?
You know, it's interesting. When I started teaching, if I tell you when, you'll hang up on me and put me in a nursing home. So I'm not going to tell you when, but it's over six decades ago. I started teaching fourth grade, and I believe it or not, and Lisa will love this, my first class that I taught was on a stage.
Yeah.
You know why?
Why?
Because the whole country was warned this year that, all right, I'll tell you when it was, 1956.
What year was it?
1956 in New York. This country was warned that in the mid-50s, there would be an explosion of children in the public schools. Mm-hmm. They had the statistics. So you need to start building schools for those children, because they're all coming. So when I started teaching, I got the first job offer I got, and they said, by the way, we're in a school that does not have room for the fourth grade. So do you mind teaching on a stage? And I said, sure, love it. So my first year of teaching, I didn't have walls. I didn't have bulletin boards. I had a curtain. And when anything happened in the auditorium that we you know, had to be quiet for, we closed the curtains. And we did pantomime. We did charades. You know what I mean? I mean, we had, it was a looser time, mm-hmm. you know. you could do more. Nobody was on your back. Nobody, and we didn't have the testing.
True.
Oh, my God. If we had testing, I had fourth grade that year. What if I had testing with my kids learning wildly? I mean, every single day I read a chapter of Winnie the Pooh to my fourth graders. I got a call from a man after 50-something years. He found me. I don't know. Of course, one of the books, he just saw my name, and he found me with, now you can find everybody, you know, with the machinery. And this gentleman called me, and he said, Mimi, I was in your class in 1957 in New York. I'm like, oh, my God, I remember you exactly. Not. So we talked for an hour. He remembered stuff we did. And Lisa, you might even been there when I would share. What do the kids remember? They don't remember the papers and the short answer quizzes and the paperwork and the formalized lessons. They remember the, do you remember when Lisa Murphy was our teacher and she did this whole jumpy thing when we were doing the verb jump? Remember we just jumped and jumped and then she said, oh, now you know what jump means. Oh, I remember that for 50 years. You know what I'm saying? What do they remember? The joyful, fun, creative things you did with them. And this guy was telling me things that I totally forgot. Totally forgot I did. Because we just did them. We had a lot of fun. We did the short vowel sounds and the long vowel sounds and, you know, and the westward movement. And, you know, and we turned tables into kind of staggered wagons. And we sat on them. And pretended we were the family that was going west.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my awesome. God. We did all that. We had more time to do that in those days. It's harder because of the testing. Mm-hmm. It's harder because of the curriculum academic, quote, standards. You know, the governor in our state made a pronouncement about 3 years ago. He said, by May, every third grader, it will be reading at grade level. If not, they will be held back.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
How's that working?
You remember that?
I don't remember the governor saying that, no.
Yeah. Oh,
but,
no.
But I know it's not appropriate.
But it happened. It happened. So teachers were like, what? So there's a kid who the next day after the deadline is reading at a third grade level, but he missed it that day. So he's held back. The place went. So all I could say, because they called me to give me a comment, and I said, there's an old Jewish expression, from your mouth to God's ear. So I said, I'd like to tell the governor, from your mouth to God's ear. You think they all third graders are going to say, wake up and read on grade level with the testing?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if the governor wants them to, of course they are.
Here's a kid who's reading Harry Potter in third grade, but now he's in a panic because of the test and he fails it.
So
he fails the test, but he says, oh, good, now I can finish reading.
Read Harry Potter.
get back to my book.
I mean, it's so the people who make decisions for young children, and this wasn't happening way back, you know, you said, how was it different? I mean, now politicians, everybody thinks they can make these academic decisions for children. And they don't even know children.
Exactly.
They probably trip on one if they saw one.
and the other thing...
Oh, wait, what's that I just tripped on? Oh, it's a child.
What's he doing here?
You know, I was in Wyoming. I think it was... You know, I've been to a lot of states with talking.
And
hanging out and dancing and singing and playing and laughing and thinking all the ways that we can teach children without... you know, destroying their love of learning. But anyway, and the teachers were telling me, it might have been Casper, I'm not sure. The early childhood teacher said, Mim, you wouldn't believe what happened. City Council wanted to change the ratio of our young children to, instead of like, I'm just trying to think of the number, but instead of one adult to like 8 children or something. They were changing it to, it might have been one adult to 7 children. They wanted to up it to like one adult to 9 children or something. Whatever the numbers, I'm very bad on numbers. But so the teachers told me they were freaked out and they wrote to the city council and they called city council and said, this is not appropriate. This is not good. And city council went, no, we think it's good. So guess what?
What?
The night of the vote, 9 strollers, 9 teachers walk in with little ones in strollers and they surround city council and they walk out.
Oh!
And city council goes, oh, shit. Oh, boy. Oh, this is not good.
That's a very strong visual.
Oh, there's so many children.
Don't trip.
And they didn't vote on it. They voted against it.
Good.
So, this would never have happened, 30 or 40 years ago, that city council would, but nowadays, it's in the legislation, it's in the guidelines, it's like books telling you how every month of the year of a child's life, this is what he or she should be doing. And Lisa and Jeff, children, the only people who don't read that are the children. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow, I didn't know I was supposed to be doing this. Oh, yuck. I better start doing it. Right. Yeah, I better read all about it so I do it.
I better learn to read so I can catch up.
You know, I have a funny, this is not funny, but it's true. So this kindergarten, and when they killed kindergarten, kindergarten is now first grade, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, if not
only
second,
Only the great, great, true, free-spirited kindergarten teachers keep the joy of kindergarten alive. But others are like formalized lessons and kids with backpacks with homework, and fill in the blanks and learn to write, right now, creative writing for kindergarten. Plot. Characters. I'm like, what the? Anyway, WTF.
Ooh. Right?
Anyway. You can edit that out.
No. Actually, I would love to have a podcast recorded where you actually swear.
Well, that's me.
Because you can, but our listeners expect us to.
Thank you, Jeff. No, I got to tell you this. This is a good one. So this kindergarten class is sitting there, and they're learning their vowels. They're learning long vowel sounds and short. The teachers, there's no play left. They went in and emptied out the blocks and the clothing and the little kitchen. They emptied it out because, by the way, I was physically present when a school emptied its kindergarten classes. And, let me come back to that, but I just want to say, this one year I was teaching at Otterbein. I taught there for 10 years in the summer, playing with the arts. And they're all teachers, all in-service teachers. One was a kindergarten teacher, terrific teacher. She went back. Oops.
That's okay.
No worries.
She came back to her building. She went to get something in her room, and she told the class that the custodian was taking out her, her play tables, her easels, taking out the blocks out of her room.
Oh my gosh.
This was a K-1 school, okay? Mm-hmm. And she was like, she just saw it. She said, what are you doing? What are you doing? Why are you doing that? He said, oh no. He said, this is what I was told to do with the kindergarten rooms. Take all of that out. And she said, I will stand here on my job. Do not touch any of that. Do not touch it, please. So she had a big fight, and she kept hers. But all the other kindergarten classes were bare, deserts. It was no longer kindergarten, a garden of children. It was just thorns. Anyway,
thorns.
So I actually have an article about that in one of the journals. But anyway, so this kindergarten class is just learning the vowel sounds, and they're sitting there and they get long vowel sounds and short vowel sounds. So this little boy says, may I use the restroom? He comes out of the restroom and he goes, my teacher, I understand. I just had a long vowel movement. I said, good for you. That's what we deserve when we teach that way to young children.
A long vowel movement.
So that can sum up what I think is happening. And only teachers who are trained to have faith in themselves and confidence in what they're doing and understand how everything connects. And a song is language arts, and a song is community helpers, and a song is movement, and a song is cooperative learning, and a song is small and gross motor skills, then they are free because they're confident, strong, and have strong beliefs to teach in the way that we're talking, teaching the key of life. But we're not training them to do that.
That's
it's like,
correct.
That's why they need you guys.
Can we take
we
a break?
We need you.
Can we take a break here and come back with another episode and dive into how you think we should be training people to work in this profession?
Yeah. Did I goof up?
No, no, we're gonna push. I'm gonna push the pause button, and then we're just gonna come back right away and start over and talk about how we should be preparing people to work in this.
Excellent. Okay, hon.
This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Back soon with another episode. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
And bye. There we go. This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.